This is Going Public on KRCU, and I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. Last month, Governor Eric Greitens issued an executive order to create a statewide prescription drug monitoring program. Missouri is the last state to establish one, but it's not for lack of trying. For years, State Representative Holly Rader pushed for legislation to create one, but her attempts fell short. Rader says while there is still room to improve the program, it's a necessary step in the right direction. What was your initial reaction to Governor Eric Greitens' executive order to create a prescription drug monitoring program last month?
Well, you know, I had to go back and read through the order to make sure that I understood what it did. And I'm very excited. I'm very excited that we are focusing on the issue, that we have an executive branch who cares about this epidemic. A governor who wants to do something, to not wait and wait and wait as we try to get this through the legislative process. It is very different than the bill that I've been pushing, than the program that I've been pushing, in that this is an additional layer. It's not a substitute for the program that I've been working on. And what this attacks is it looks at the prescriber. So something that, you know, very much out of the box thinking, very new. I don't know that there's another state doing this. And I've been working with all of the states for this is my fifth year now. And so what it does is it's going to look at the pharmacies. It's going to look at the prescribers, the physicians. And that way they'll be able to detect where the pill mills are, where scripts are being egregiously written and passed out. And so then that can be handled from, you know, board getting someone, you know, regarding their license to prescribe. So that's an area we haven't looked at, definitely needs to be looked at. Pill mills are, you know, very, very difficult for those with addictions, because it is easier for you to go there and get those medications. Not all pain clinics are pill mills. You know, there are many pain clinics in our state that are very helpful, very cautious with their patients, very, very caring with them. But we do have pill mills, and even in the Boot Hill, we have pill mills that people, you know, stand in line for hours to get their medication, to get their scripts. And, you know, those do need to be controlled. They need to be looked at and brought to justice. And so that is very important. That is what the governor's executive order will do. So it's a wonderful additional layer, a cross check to the traditional PDMP. But the traditional PDMP, the one that I've been fighting for and will continue to fight for, is a clinical tool. It allows the physician and the pharmacist to actually see their patient's narcotic information. So right now, if your family doctor, if you go in, you're having migraines and they give you an opiate, then say you fall and break your leg or break your hip, and you're going to a specialist. That specialist, unless you bring all of your medications in and show them, that specialist doesn't know that you're on a narcotic by your other doctor. So they could absolutely give you something that's going to counteract, or that's going to be too many milligrams of an opiate added with the others, and it can be lethal. You know, if a psychiatrist is giving you Ambien to help you sleep and maybe Xanax for anxiety, and you go to your family practitioner because you've hurt your back and they give you an opiate, sometimes that combination can kill someone. And so our physicians, they need this as a clinical tool. But then it also helps with those of us who have, you know, addiction, substance use disorder in our families and in our lives and in our person, because our physicians need to be able to see, you know, when my daughter goes to, or my cousin, or, you know, my nieces go to the doctor, I want their physician to be able to see, you know, my daughter's been a recovering addict for 3 years now, to be able to see, okay, she once had a problem with these. And so if she has hurt herself, you know, appendicitis, whatever, it's better to give her an alternative, not to give her an opiate. And so those are the things you want your physicians to be able to make the best clinical decision based on your history. And right now we've just tied their hands.
This is also an issue that is quite personal and it hits home for you. Can you kind of share that story from the very beginning?
Oh, absolutely. So I was raised very poor, on welfare, lots of men in and out of the home. But one of my stepdads was a dealer. And my sister was an addict by the time she was 16. She married a dealer at 16. My cousin died at 39 from long-term opiate abuse. You know, that was commonplace in my life. I grew up around drugs. It was commonplace. I didn't do them. I was afraid of them because I wanted to be very conscious of everything going on around me as a child to be able to protect myself. But, you know, I had to quit school at 15 to help take care of my family. And by the time I was 16, I was married, pregnant, and a high school dropout. And so, you know, I looked at my life and said, I want to do something different. I don't want to raise this child in the same atmosphere that I grew up in. And so I raised her in church. You know, I went to work. I worked hard, multiple jobs, and got my GED, you know, started taking classes, college classes at night and on the weekends. And I raised my kids in church. You know, I was a two-parent home, a mom up in their business all the time that knows what addiction looks like. You know, I know what drugs look like. And, you know, I'm that crazy mom that has my kids, when they come in at night, they have to come in and wake me up and kiss me goodnight just so I can, you know, smell, see if they have alcohol in their breath. I do random drug testing in my house. And at 17, my daughter cut her thumb open at work, opening a bag of okra. Hard worker. She was already accepted into SLU's physical therapy program. I mean, bright child, and went to the emergency room to get it stitched up, and they gave her a script of Lorazepam. Now, you know, I don't know when they quit giving Tylenol 3s or, you know, those kind of things that it seems like now it's so easy to get a script of painkiller. Anyways, this was, she's 31 now. She was 17, so it was many years ago. And when she finished that bottle, and scientifically it is proven now that someone that has substance use disorder can become addicted within 1 to 7 days of being on an opiate. So when she finished her prescription, she just started purchasing them at work. And then when she got to where she was taking so many she couldn't afford them anymore, she switched to meth. And so we went through 13 years of in and out of rehabs, prison, my grandson being born with opiates in his system, and me having custody of him. And, you know, I spent many weeks not knowing if my child was alive. Because, of course, they, you know, they don't come home anymore. They stop coming home and they live in God only knows what. And as a mom, you're wondering, you know, what did I do wrong? You know, I tried to do all these things, but after all of these years, I've studied this for so long now and working so closely with the medical community and the mental health community. And my mother struggled with mental health my whole life. And so, you know, I'd been around that, but I never really realized that it's a brain disease. And so it's scientifically proven now that addiction is. And so it's no different than if you have heart disease and you insist on still being a smoker. You know, that's an addiction and it's harming you. But there's so much stigma around drug addiction that, you know, there's so many parents that worry and wonder, well, what did I do wrong? And they're embarrassed. You know, they don't want to reach out for help. And then a lot of times it really separates them and their child because they think that their child is doing this against them. You know, they're going against how they were raised. My daughter was certainly going against how she was raised. But, you know, I know now that their body begins becoming very sick and it's very hard to get through that clean phase. But then once they get clean, there's all of these mental triggers, emotional triggers that move them back into drugs. And so without the, you know, we got Rachel clean many times, but without the mental health component to that, they don't learn how to manage it. And so they go back into it. And she's been clean for just over 3 years now. And what we did differently was we were able to get her into a longer term treatment that had that mental health component with it, which is so important, you know, because once they're clean, they're also, they also have all of these memories. You know, she had all of these thoughts of how terrible she, you know, treated us, of the danger she put her son in. And so many times you medicate yourself, you self-medicate to not think about that because you can't get past the guilt of what you've done. You can't forgive yourself. And that's such an important part of this. It's all a part of this. I mean, this is a brain disease. And so you have to have that mental health component with getting your body clean. And she takes her recovery very seriously. You know, she goes to her meetings. It's all very important to her. And it's just like, you know, if you have diabetes, you have to watch what you eat. You know, it's a daily walk that you have to do. If you have heart disease, you have to watch what you eat. You can't be a smoker. It's a daily walk. And that is exactly the same with addiction.
After the break, more with State Representative Holly Rader on the new statewide prescription drug monitoring program.
I'm Ari Shapiro. If you find NPR reliable and comforting, you're not alone. If your old car is a bit less than reliable, well, you're not alone either. Donate your car to us and turn it into the programs you love.
Visit KRCU.org and click on support for all the details.
We're back with Going Public on KRCU, and I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. If you're just now joining us, I've been talking with State Representative Holly Rader about the new statewide prescription drug monitoring program. Here is more from our conversation.
How do we change that stigma?
You know, that is a great question, and it's one that I've been working so hard on, and I think that and that's why I tell my story so candidly, is because, you know, I was raised in the atmosphere that people assume addiction is in. And but yet I raised my children very differently, middle class home, two parent home, in church. And my child became an addict very easily. And so two of my three children have had struggles with addiction. And so my story, I hope, tells others, shows others that this, you know, I'm the face of addiction. My family is. This knows no socioeconomic background. It's very much a brain disease, and it's scientific, and we must start treating it that way. You know, when I was in junior high, I remember different families that, you know, their kid would go off on a ski vacation, you know, and then years later I learned that they were going into rehab. And we have to talk about that as a society. You know, this is an American problem. This is our problem. We have we have less than 5% of the world's population. We consume 95% of the opiates. So that's staggering. And that is, it's an American problem. And so we've got to start talking about this. We've got to start talking about the mental health component of it and the fact that long-term care is so much, has so much better outcomes than prison and is less expensive. So as a state, you know, we need to start looking at that. We need to, the prison system, the director there told me last year that 75% of the inmates that came in the last 12-month period had substance use disorder. And so when you look at that, we have to do something different. We need to start treating this differently. We need to treat it for what it is, and it's a brain disease, and we need to get people into long-term treatment that have, that can help them manage the triggers, that can help them understand. And it needs to be all hands on deck. you know, and so that's with the governor's executive order. I'm very excited about it. I think that it's another layer that we've not seen. You know, the counties are passing the traditional PDMP, and I've been working very hard to help push that because we must have it. You know, without our medical community being able to see this history of their patient, which they're allowed to have. But right now they have to get it by phone tree. They have to call the pharmacist in town. They have to call the other doctors if they suspect their patient's been somewhere else.
So they have to go on the trail by themselves to figure it out.
We've turned them into investigators, you know, our physicians. And so, and those with those who need the medication get a gazillion questions when they go in now because the physicians don't have anything to look at. They have to scrutinize every patient. And so having a PDMP where our medical professionals can look at their patient's data will also help those who do need the medication because then their physician can prescribe with confidence that they've not been anywhere else.
Well, I want to talk about accountability here. How do we keep physicians accountable? Because there are physicians who are doing the right thing and keeping up with their patients. Is it about having them have a relationship with their patients? And also, how do you keep pharmaceutical companies accountable as well?
You know, I think that with the epidemic, we have seen pharmaceutical companies step up to the plate. Mallinckrodt is a company out of headquartered in St. Louis, and they have been instrumental in this fight. They have been with me from day one asking, how can we help? They have had lobbyists at the Capitol, working members, trying to explain how important this is. They've taken me to their corporate headquarters to show me how much of the scientific research they're doing on abuse deterrent pills. You know, we have many of our pharmaceutical companies are really working hard to try to prevent. They want their medications to help people, not to harm people. And so we are seeing the industry turn towards really focusing on that. I know Mallinckrodt's not the only company doing that. But and our physicians, you know, I mean, when this first started exploding, it was because the pharmaceutical company who, you know, we all know now had marketed them as safe. And so our physicians were writing thinking that they were safe. Well, that was in the early 90s. So they're writing these pills as they're safe, and then, you know, grandma's got six of them left in the pill bottle in the medicine cabinet in the bathroom, and, you know, 16-year-old grandson comes in, takes one of the pills, and then he starts buying them off the streets, and you've got grandma addicted, and you've got, you know, the kid addicted now. And, I mean, it has just been a tsunami since then of addictions because of the medication that are meant to help people. And so I think giving our physicians the tool that they need to make the best clinical decision for their patient is very important. I think that another thing that we really need to do is, you know, right now our physicians, and I think that this is a part of the Affordable Health Care Act, but our physicians are, they get patient satisfactory surveys. And so if you're a physician at a hospital, patient satisfactory survey. So if you have someone who's addicted coming in and you say, look, you know, we need to talk about your addiction and let's get you in, talk about the options that you have available, and say that person isn't ready and says, no, you know, I want the medication, and the physician won't write it. Well, then they can give them a bad score on that patient satisfaction survey, which then in turn hits that doctor. So it's a horrible system that we have going right now in many areas. But, you know, we really need to figure out a way to change the patient satisfactory survey. You know, if someone is an addict, if someone is known to be, you know, seeking drugs, then they shouldn't have that hit them for not prescribing. So I think that we're getting somewhere with our physicians by giving them this data, giving them this information. I think that we're going to see less prescriptions written. And then also with the pharmaceutical companies, I think that they are definitely taking note. You know, now that we've had lawsuits filed against them, you know, I know that Attorney General Holly has a lawsuit ongoing right now with three different pharmaceutical companies, not Mallinckrodt. They've been very helpful. I want to be sure to, you know, to say that, because without them, we would certainly not be where we are today.
Where does Southeast Missouri fall into this conversation of substance use, substance abuse, misuse? How do we fall into that?
You know, in Southeast Missouri, and, you know, and I represent Mississippi and Scott counties. Mississippi is one of the poorest counties in the state. Pemiscot County, just south of us, Dunklin County, those are all the poorest counties in the state. And so we have higher numbers, higher percentages of domestic violence. We have one of the highest percentages of sexual abuse in children. And so with all of these, you know, we have tremendous mental health issues going on in our counties. And with that, you see higher numbers of drug use and drug abuse. And so it's, you know, we're often an outlier in these negatives. You know, we have a high number of teenage pregnancies. We have a high number of high school dropouts. You know, we seem to rank in the highest in the state on all of these negatives. But, you know, we've lost jobs for many years. And one of the things that you see correlate across the nation with drug abuse is jobs is job losses. So high unemployment equals higher drug use across the nation. And then we also see those states that have high occupational hazards, they have a higher number of drug abuse because of getting hurt at work, and then you go get on medication, you don't know that you have addictions, and then you can't get off them.
So similar to your daughter's situation.
Absolutely, yes. And so, you know, we definitely, we need a little more help down here. We need a little more attention, and we certainly need to focus on, I think if we put more money, and we have been doing better about this last few years, but making sure that our mental health department is well funded, because, you know, that's in many of these cases, that's the hub of what's going to be helping these families.
Well, Springfield recently made a, you know, big stride in this whole process of getting a prescription drug monitoring program, as well as other cities within the state of Missouri. Why is it that in Southeast Missouri we're not making those gains?
You know, we have, we've actually had several of our counties have passed locally the prescription drug monitoring. Mississippi County has passed it. Stoddard County has passed it. New Madrid County has passed it. Scott and Cape Girardeau County has not. But I know that I spoke with a pharmacist in Sykeston a couple weeks ago, and he told me that there were some strides being made on it. And I know that Cape Girardeau has at least had the discussions. It's very inexpensive, and St. Louis County Health Department helps get you rolled in. It's the same program that I've been trying to get done on a statewide basis, and it's going to become a statewide program because of, as these other counties add in, you're adding into that same database. So they've signed on with the vendor APRIS, who has 44 other states, and that's the company that I was looking at for our state, hoping that we would go with them as well. They've been doing this for many, many years, so certainly not recreating the wheel. The way that they have it is set up. St. Louis County Health Department has it set up. It's very inexpensive. It's $7 for each end user annually. And so $7 or $11 annually. But, you know, what pharmacist, what physician wouldn't pay that to be able to have access to their patients' medical records? And so Green County, Springfield just passed it. I know McDonald County, I was at a meeting with them a couple weeks ago. They're getting ready to pass it. We have, there was a meeting in Joplin this week as well. I know Representative Charlie Davis was there and talking to them about the PDMP. And so my goal is by the end of this year, we'll have 80% of Missouri's population under a PDMP. Right now, we're at about 65%. And so we're moving, and the St. Louis County program is very robust. It's a wonderful program. And I've watched a demo of going through. I've gone through and done the clicks. It's very easy. It's not anything that's going to take a physician extra amount of time to look at. Just three clicks, and you're looking at your patient's information. And so you have your own private portal. It's very safe. And I'm excited. I think that, you know, once Cape Girardeau County gets on board, I think you'll see kind of the fear taken out of some of these smaller counties around us. But we're getting there. Southeast Missouri is getting there.
Well, it's a big step, because that's combating two issues, mental health and drug use. And as far as mental health services within this region, they're pretty slim.
Yes. And that was one of the things when, you know, we didn't have the money to put my daughter into an expensive rehab all these years ago. And so we were trying to find services in Southeast Missouri, but we're, you know, there's waiting lists. There's waiting. I mean, even now when I call as the state rep to try to help someone, you know, there are people waiting in line for beds to try to get clean. And so we've need to change that.
I want to go back to something. This St. Louis County prescription drug monitoring program, this started, I believe, last year.
Yes.
And they have been moving ever since.
They have. And, you know, our whole state, I mean, our medical community has been begging for this for years. And our sheriff's department, our police departments, they've been asking for this for years. Not so that they can look in it, because they can't. They don't have access to it. However, when less drugs are on the street, it helps their job, you know. And so that's what the PDMP does. It pulls back some of those drugs that are out on the street, which helps law enforcement. The medical community actually has information for their patients, so they can make better clinical decisions based on actual data. And so when St. Louis County passed this and got it up and running, and the different health departments across the state started working with St. Louis County, it's just been, I mean, just a breath of fresh air. It's been so welcomed, because it's what people have been asking for. It's what they've been, you know, the medical community has been asking for years. And so they're really helping to push their counties. I have a call today, a conference call today, that with the counties and with the municipalities, associations and the hospital association, to see, okay, where do we need to target next to try to get the most people possible under a PDMP. And so it's been a very, very much just a learning process for these counties. Once they're educated on it and see how easy it is, they've been folding right in. And St. Louis County Health Department's done a wonderful job getting out and showing the counties how easy this is, giving them all the information that they need to be able to pass this locally, and then setting them up for to go live after, you know, they've started putting their data in.
It seems like they're slowly breaking down that stigma too, with all this pull from other communities within the state.
I think so. You know, I really feel like that. After my first the first time that I spoke on this on the House floor. And, you know, I told my story. I told how I was raised. I told, you know, about my daughter. And at that time, she was still an addict and still out there. And I had custody of my grandson. And when I sat down, I had representative after representative coming up and telling me their story and telling me how much they appreciated me being so candid. You know, one said that his brother had been missing for months and he was a heroin addict. Another, you know, had another story. And so I pray that we will stop hiding this, and that as others come forward and start talking, it's going to make it easier for that person who hears that to say, you know what, you know, this isn't something to be embarrassed of. We have to shine light on it to help get solutions. And so that's what we're doing.
And then to kind of wrap this up, so yes, while we do have a statewide prescription drug monitoring program, it's not the end all.
Right.
The problem.
It's right. To me, for addiction, the most important aspect of a PDMP is for that physician to be able to see what is going on in their patient's narcotic history. You need to have those conversations with your physician whom you trust in your physician's office. They can help point you to places to get help. To me, that's the most important part. Our physicians must have access to their patient's information. So while this is wonderful, and I cannot thank the governor enough for stepping forward and doing something and saying, okay, this is something we can do. Let's take this first step. We definitely must continue with the county effort, giving our physicians, our medical community, the information that they need to make these important clinical decisions. Without that, we're not going to pull those drugs back off the streets. And law enforcement is still going to be over, you know, completely underwater when it comes to trying to get the drugs off the street. So this is allowing physicians to have access is the cornerstone, in my opinion.
Well, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's our show. To hear my entire conversation with State Representative Holly Rader, visit krcu.org or go to iTunes to hear this podcast. I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. Join me Friday nights at 6 and Sundays at 3 for KRCU's Going Public.